How's everybody doing today? Welcome back to another episode of The Banker Next Door. I am your host, Dr. Joe Berquist. Today, I just wanted to get everybody an update on bank merger and acquisition news. There was a flurry of articles in the last week, and I just wanted to try to bring everybody up to date. So let's bring in here. So a bunch of articles from S&P Capital Intelligence. So the first one I'm going to go through here is the long pending U.S. bank deals set to benefit from potential rate cuts. Not so fast. Banks could see a surprise benefit if their M&A deals close later than expected. An increased number of U.S. bank deals have faced delays and timeline extensions as the regulatory approval process takes longer. We'll get to that in a second. However, deals facing delays could benefit if they close when interest rates are lower, making mark-to-market marks less punitive and transactions more advantageous, industry experts said. Yes, this is true. And then they go on to give an example. One example, Eastern Bank shares expressed doubt that its acquisition of Cambridge Bank Corp, the second largest pending U.S. bank deal, can close in April as previously expected, but that could be a positive for the bank. Obviously, if it hangs out a little longer. So yes, you could have a situation there where the long pending bank deals, you know, where if they drag this out a little longer, it could benefit banks. So we'll have to see. Stay tuned on that one. Let's go on to the next one here. So FDIC's bank merger review overhaul to have chilling effect on deal activity. Yes. What did we just say? So the FDIC's proposed changes for reviewing bank mergers are likely to further dampen banks' deal appetite and prolong regulatory reviews. In a statement of policy released March 21st, the agency codified what factors it intends to use to evaluate bank mergers and took steps to increase transparency for their reviews. A number of industry experts believe the changes create uncertainty, extend regulatory review, reduce bank M&A appetite, and open up confidentiality risks. It will both slow transaction approval down and potentially reduce the number of transactions that even get proposed, said James Stevens, partner and co-leader of Troutman Pepper Hamilton Sanders, LLP's Financial Services Industry Group. The FDIC's new document doesn't give any clarity on anything, Stevens said in an interview. The proposal will have a particularly chilling effect on regional bank M&A as the regulator singled out deals resulting in banks with more than $100 billion in assets as warranting increased scrutiny. Yes. And it basically, then this article goes on to say that there's a more tedious application process and goes into that. And so, you know, this is a perfect example of Ronald Reagan had a great saying. I think he said the scariest thing that you could hear is the sentence, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. You know, I mean, that's a perfect example of this with the FDIC, what they're doing here. Not that there is certainly not that there shouldn't be scrutiny of bank merger and acquisition deals. That's for sure. However, there's a big however there. This seems to be going way too far. And we are the industry already had a problem with the FDIC and the OCC and all these regulators taking way too long to approve bank merger and acquisition deals. And now this is just going to compound on the difficulties of that. I think what is particularly troubling is when you start talking about the potential merger and acquisitions of these larger regional banks, these $100 billion in asset plus regional banks. I think some of those banks should merge and they should get turned into bigger banks that can have more capital and better liquidity and create better economies of scale. I think in the right situations, that makes a whole lot of sense. And I think that regulators should be looking to perhaps put some of those banks together that they know right now today that some of those banks are going to be a problem or could be a problem in the next 6 to 9 months. And those are the banks that hopefully they are talking to right now and saying, hey, we should try to put these together. But everything that we're seeing right now basically says that that's not the case. And that is not what's happening. That basically the regulators are just being an impediment and they're just standing in the way and saying, we're just going to, you know, scrutinize everything. And we're really going to slow down and be a major impediment to any kind of bank M&A deals. And basically this is going to have a chilling effect for the rest of the year on, you know, the industry. And you're basically going to see hardly any M&A transaction here toward the end of the year. I think we had, I think I reported last time we had like 100 deals last year. I'd be shocked if we get to 100 deals this year. I mean, we might get 60 or 70, but yeah, you're not going to see that many. Okay, let's move it on here. Next, we got U.S. Bank M&A wave more likely in 2025 than 2024. Piper Sandler analyst says, and right here, the expected U.S. Bank M&A wave in 2024 has stayed on pause and will likely be delayed to 2025. The higher interest rate environment depressed deal making in 2023 and into 2024, and 2 to 3 potential cuts this year will not be sufficient to unlock demand from potential buyers, the analyst wrote in tone. Also, in the note, also additional clarity on what the worst of any credit cycle could be would be liked by many, they said. While there are still impediments to deals today, namely the still elevated rate environment making deal math difficult, the increasingly combative regulatory landscape and fears around a potential credit economic cycle will continue to be believers that there is a significant amount of pent-up market volume that will trade likely in 2025. So basically, the analyst is already conceding that basically, yeah, this year for M&A is dead. You know, the rate environment, even if we get 75 basis points, it's not going to be enough to steer to really increase the appetite of buyers. And then you've got the regulatory environment, and then you have the overall economy, the credit cycle that we could be going into. All these negative things are basically going to really put a damper on M&A through the rest of the year. And as positive as they were in January coming after the new year, in just 3 short months, we've already seen a 180 here. And now they're basically, everybody's throwing in the towel already on 2024, saying, yeah, we're going to have to wait till 2025. And also to add into that, I mean, it's an election year. Anytime you have an election year, that's going to put a ton of uncertainty, and most M&A transactions and stuff like that, I think particularly after June, you get through the first 6 months of the year, especially in an election year, a lot of stuff is just going to get put on hold. A lot of people are just going to sit there and say, well, let's just wait till after the election. Let's see what happens. And then after the election, we'll kind of know what administration we're going to have for the next 4 years. And then we'll go ahead and make our decision based on that. And that's just generally what happens in an election year. So let's keep going here. 2024 opens with the most active big ticket M&A quarters in nearly 2 years. So outside of the banking industry, two more $10 billion plus M&A deals were announced in March, and the first quarter finished with 10 worldwide, the highest total since the second quarter of 2022. The largest announcement of the month was the Home Depot's $18.25 billion deal to acquire SRS Distribution, Inc., which is being sold by investors. That deal was followed by EQT Corp's $14.3 billion agreement to purchase Equitrans Midstream. The activity in March marked a slowdown from the 3 previous months, which each recorded 4 $10 billion plus M&A deals. However, the continued announcements of large deals is a positive trend because weeks-long droughts with no significant deals occurred multiple times in 2022 and 2023. And in 2023, only one $10 billion plus deal was announced in July, and none was announced in January. In 2022, June, July, and August recorded no $10 billion plus deal announcements. So outside of the banking industry, it seems like M&A, there is some M&A, good M&A activity going on. There are some $10 billion plus deals happening. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. And then finally on this front here, we have bank M&A de novo activity down due to regulatory scrutiny as per the Fed's Bowman. So reduced de novo and bank M&A activity is largely due to regulatory scrutiny, according to Federal Reserve Governor Michelle Bowman. Both U.S. bank M&A and de novo activity have been depressed recently. U.S. bank M&A reached a 23-year low in 2023 with under 100 announcements, what I just said. Yeah, I just thought it was under 100. And the slow pace has continued into 2024 with just 28 announcements through April 1st. De novo activity has been even slower with just 4 new banks last year, the lowest total in years. Bowman expressed concern that regulators' intensified scrutiny has contributed to the slowdown in activity. I am concerned that many of these actions may actually undermine the long-term viability of banks, she said in April 2nd speech. Yeah, she's absolutely correct. The regulatory burden for opening a new de novo community bank is basically ridiculous at this point. And it's been that way since 2008. There was a little bit of, it got a little bit better under the Trump administration. And you saw a few more banks getting opened up in those 4 years, but not tremendously better. I think the biggest problem, and I've talked about this before, is it's the one of the biggest things is the amount of capital that you have to raise in order to, you know, have it, you know, to just give yourself a chance. Not, there's no guarantees, but to just give yourself a chance to be successful, you have to raise a huge amount of capital. We're talking 20, 30, 40, maybe even 50 million bucks to get yourself off the ground and hopefully get yourself to profitability within, say, a 3-year period of time. So it is, and that's just the capital, again, which plays into the regulation and what the regulators expect in terms of, you know, okay, you're going to raise this capital and you're going to follow all these rules and requirements and everything else. So I think that the whole de novo process, I think, needs to be rethought. It needs to be made a lot easier to start up a de novo bank. A lot of this red tape and bureaucracy needs to cut. They need to make the application process more streamlined. And to be fair, this has been an ongoing conversation for a long time now. And there has definitely been some, some people would say there probably has been some slight improvements to the process or whatever. But I don't know. I mean, based on things I've heard from other people in the industry, I would say I don't think that's still the case. But anyway, it's just the bottom line is that the whole process around starting up a bank around de novo startups, it needs to be reworked. And it needs to be reworked in a way that can give people a realistic opportunity, give bank professionals an opportunity to realistically have a shot at starting up de novo community bank, because we do need more startup banks. We need a lot more startup banks in the country, and we need to get that going again. And especially, you know, you have a lot of areas right now in states where you're starting to see we used to talk about like a food desert, the concept of a food desert, not having a food store in your area. Well, now we're having bank deserts where there's no bank in your community and there's no bank in the area. So that's a broader conversation. And then finally, I came across this interesting article here from Bank Director, which basically was called 10 Mistakes to Avoid in M&A Loan Portfolio Due Diligence. So conducting proper and thorough due diligence will save banks headaches down the road. And this was written by Alexander Spratt, who is the founder of Ardmore Advisors, who is a local company very close to me here in PA. I have actually met Alex on a few occasions. He is a very well-known and very well-respected consultant for banks in the kind of PA tri, if you want to call it the tri-state area. He's been around a long time. Ardmore Advisors is a very successful firm. But let's see here. So what are the 10 things that he recommends? So basically, do not do a cursory due diligence. The two biggest mistakes bank makes are overpaying for the target and doing an ineffective due diligence, particularly on loan portfolios, the target's biggest asset. Most bank failures include risk loan portfolios. New York Community Bank might want to pay attention to that one. Number two, do not communicate hard and predetermined desired mark-to-market mark for due diligence. Number three, do not overlook the importance of culture, risk appetite, and loan portfolio management. I would say my argument would be that most bank mergers that do not succeed because of culture. Doesn't have anything to do with overpaying. Doesn't have anything to do with look at the own portfolio. And most of the time, I think it's culture. You put two completely different cultures that do not mesh together, and it's a, it can be a recipe for disaster. Number four, do not rush to complete the due diligence at the expense of thoroughness and quality. Number five, do not confuse a due diligence with an ordinary loan review. That's a great one. Number six, do not use junior lenders or credit analysts. Yes, get your most experienced people in there looking at this stuff. Number seven, do not think saving money on a due diligence is cost effective. Number eight, do not minimize the impact of integrating any loan portfolio into your bank. Number nine, do not put due diligence results into a model and forget the observations and knowledge gleaned that may be very useful when integrating another bank into your own. And then finally, number 10, do not forget that loan problems are inherent in every bank's portfolio. This is so true. But I want to go back to number six for a second. Do not use junior lenders or credit analysts. So I have been through this process a few times where, you know, banks were either buying another bank or a bank was selling perhaps a big chunk of their loan portfolio. And so I had to go in with another group and analyze that bank's loan portfolio, or at least what was for sale, to determine if it was something if these were loans that were worth buying. And I would say the first couple of times I did this being a junior person at that time, I don't believe I was as thorough as I should have been. I hit the basics, but I would say probably the third time I did it, I was way, way better at it. And I was really able to hone in on what were the most important things and then drill down on those things further. And I think the depth of analysis and the thoroughness that I was able to put in made a huge amount of difference. And so I would concur with what Alex wrote in this article. Now, I will say, I was in there as a junior person, but I was not the only one. I mean, I was in there with a lot of senior people, chief lending officer, chief credit officer, highly experienced lenders that had been doing it for, 20, 30 years. So, I might have been low person on the totem pole at that point, but I was also with a group of highly experienced people that were able to kind of, hold my hand, as it were, a little bit at times. But then over the years, like I said, I definitely improved at it. So interesting point there. Good point, I think, from Alex. Sometimes as a junior person, you can kind of lose sight of the bigger picture, as it were. But that's okay. I mean, that's what experience is. There is no substitute for experience. So anyway, so very good article, 10 mistakes to avoid an M&A loan portfolio due diligence right there. So what are the big takeaways from this? So basically, bank M&A is not looking too hot for the rest of 2024. The interest rate environment, the regulatory environment, the overall economy, the potential credit cycle, all negative things that are affecting potential bank M&A deals right now. And so don't see a lot of bank M&A horizon for 2024. And then with the election year and the election coming in November, that's also going to put a damper on these things. There's always M&A news coming in, usually on a quarterly basis. So as I get more information throughout the rest of the year, I'll be sure to come back and share it with everybody and update. Bank M&A is always one of these unfolding topics that continues to evolve constantly throughout every year. So I'll be back soon with a further update on bank M&A transactions as that information comes up. But I would ask everyone to please check out some of the other episodes and things that I posted this weekend, along with the weekly banking update, which is kind of the main show, if you will, for this channel. And please make sure to check us out on YouTube, Rumble, and all major podcast platforms. Please make sure to check out thebankernextdoor.com. And as always, please make sure to like, share, and subscribe. It always helps the channel. And I will be back to see everybody again real soon. Thank you so much.